It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you here. Today on the show, my good friend Francis Jackson. Francis Jackson is an attorney who specializes in disability law for those seeking veterans' disability benefits, as well as Social Security disability benefits. A founding partner of Jackson McNichol, he's most recently appeared as a guest of the Ben Glass on the Consumer Advocate Show, discussing benefits for veterans and Social Security disability benefits, and how his practice allows him to make a difference in the lives of people facing disability. Francis has been featured on NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox network affiliates around the country. He has also been quoted in USA Today and is listed in Cambridge Who's Who. Francis was honored by the National Academy of Bestselling Authors with a Quillie Award for his contribution as a joint author to the bestselling book, Protect and Defend, where he wrote about protecting one's rights to veterans' disability compensation. Also in 2017, Mr. Jackson was inducted into America's Most Trusted Lawyers for his outstanding work in disability law. For more information, you can find out more about Francis and his team at veteransbenefits.com. That's veteransbenefits.com. Francis Jackson, welcome back.
Thanks, Bert. I always enjoy the opportunity to chat with you.
Hey, you know, before we get started, I wanted to ask you this. What drew you to this type of law? I mean, because, you know, from what I understand, I mean, first of all, veterans law, you have a smaller pool of people. You're dealing with the government, which is never easy, as opposed to personal injury law, where you have a much larger pool. So what was the draw? What was the thing that got you to go for veterans' disability benefits?
Well, it was a combination of things, Bert. When I was a kid in high school, my dad, who was a World War II vet, had some serious health issues and ended up going to the VA. And, you know, they helped him out with his health issues and so on, but he was never able to go back to work after that, and nobody ever talked to him about benefits. So years later, as you know, I was practicing before they created the opportunity for lawyers to help veterans back in 1988. And I was asked to do an appeal, and I was doing a lot of appellate work at that time, so I thought nothing of that, and said, sure, you know, I'll take this appeal. And then it was in D.C., and the court, when I started digging into all the stuff I needed to file, was not the D.C. Court of Appeals, where I thought the case was, but was this new court I'd never heard of called the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. So I jumped through all the hoops and got myself accredited and, you know, admitted to the bar of the court. And it was fascinating. This was a court, Bert, that at that time essentially had one volume of precedential cases. One. One vet app, in fact. And I read through some of those cases trying to find some precedent for what I was doing. There wasn't any. And we looked around for other precedents, and we found some decisions by the various service branch, JAG, systems, and the various judge advocate generals for the Navy, Army, and so on have some published opinions, and that's what we ended up working with, along with some regular general civil cases on presumptions and so on, because this issue involved a presumption. But We did the oral argument and won it for this poor widow that was being denied benefits. And I thought, you know, this is really pretty neat. And so we started doing some of those cases as they came along, and over the years, slowly developed into a bigger part of our practice. And then in 2012, we really started trying to focus in on this area and build the practice in this particular area. And I'm happy to say that we've had quite a bit of success with that. But I never forgot that he was my dad. He's at the VA. It was obvious to them he wasn't going back to work. It was obvious to us he wasn't going back to work. And nobody ever said a word to him about his benefits. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't want to see that happen to other people. And we've really tried over the years to make sure that people that we dealt with knew what their possible benefits were. And to the greatest extent that we could, we helped them get those benefits. Because I didn't want to see anybody else left in the situation that my parents got left in.
Yeah, that is extraordinary. That is interesting how things worked out. And I think that's, you know, for lack of better terms, that is a great example of taking a lemon and turning it into lemonade. I mean, it seems almost like destiny in one sense. Because, but for that experience with your parents or your father specifically, you would not even known about this area of law, or you would not have known it as well.
Yeah, and I probably wouldn't have paid much attention to it, in all honesty, but given my background, it resonated with me.
Sure. Sure. All right. So let's move on. I have a question. I know a while back there was a lawsuit, some kind of federal lawsuit class action regarding the 3M earplugs, because apparently they were defective and they were causing hearing loss. Has there been any progress on this lawsuit?
Yeah, and that's actually an interesting question, Bert. This is an odd piece of litigation. The way this works, it's not technically a class action. It's what's called multi-district litigation. But when the federal courts have a whole bunch of lawsuits that raise essentially the same issue scattered all around the country, they have a provision in the rules for the court to centralize all the cases under a single judge who manages what they call this multi-district litigation. And that's what's happened with this 3M litigation. A judge in Pensacola, Florida, Judge Rogers, is the one who's been put in charge of this particular collection of lawsuits. And there are approximately 250,000 cases around the country that have all been centralized in Pensacola under Judge Rogers' direction. And the way this works, it's really kind of fascinating. What they do, because it's not really practical to try 250,000 different lawsuits, the plaintiffs pick a group, if you will, of cases. And you could think of them as test cases. What they do is they try those cases, typically to a jury, and in these cases to a jury, can be to a judge, but in this case to a jury. And so far, they've tried 13 different cases where the plaintiffs won, and three where the defendant won. And the idea of doing this group of trials is to give both sides a sense of what the likely outcome is going to be. So here, as you can see, if you take 16 and the planets win 13 times, it tells 3M that they don't really have a good track record here and they probably ought to settle these suits. So that's the purpose of these kind of bellwether trials is to help lawyers on both sides understand how juries are going to see these cases and what they're looking at in terms of potential damages. So far, the way it's worked out is that over these 13 cases, the juries have awarded $300 million.
Wow.
That's a lot of money. So what it's telling 3M is that they're looking at serious dollars here. And so they tried an interesting maneuver. They consolidated a bunch of these cases and assigned them to a particular subsidiary of GM. And then they tried to put that subsidiary into bankruptcy. And that would help them get rid of the cases.
Right.
But Judge Rogers said, no, they're not getting away with that trick. So that's where things stand now. The 3M has learned that they're going to get probably a large number of unfavorable jury verdicts if they go to trial in these cases, that the damages are potentially quite large, and that they're not going to get away with trying to shift the burden to one of its subsidiaries, which is Aereo Technologies. They tried to put that into bankruptcy in Indiana and essentially dump the cases that way. So it's now at a point where, in all probability, 3M is going to put some serious money into a settlement proposal, and there will be a multi-district litigation settlement. But I mean, you never know. They may still opt to try these case by case, but that's extremely unlikely given what's happened so far.
Yeah, and it doesn't. Again, based on their track record, it's possible that they're going to win a few more and lose a lot more. So they're not really going to save any money. But I have to, you know, I guess, I don't know if I want to say it's a good try, but certainly you could see their strategy by putting all the, you know, putting all the liability into a different business or corporation entity and then, you know, being able to file bankruptcy. We would all love to do that. I think that maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago, they probably would have gotten away with it. But I think things have changed so much that those kind of shenanigans or strategies are no longer, accepted. I mean, I believe former President Trump tried to do the same thing with one of his litigations, and I think the judge did the same thing. You just can't get away with that.
Well, the model that they were using, I'm sure you'll remember, years ago there was all the asbestos litigation, and Johns Manville, the manufacturer of all the asbestos roof shingles, ended up with that, it wasn't a trick on their part. They genuinely went bankrupt because of the expense of all the lawsuits. But
right.
But that's where the model came from, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's been tried. I think multiple times. These guys aren't the first. Won't be the last. All right. So, here he is. Here we are, brand new year, 2023, and it struck me that you know, you and I have talked multiple times in the past about the VA's computer system and how archaic it is, and what's interesting to me is this was the same excuse that the FAA used just was it a week or two ago where I think it was just a week ago where they had to cancel, I don't know if it was like 4,000 flights or 40,000 flights. Anyway, a bunch of flights were canceled due to the FAA's computer system. That they had some kind of glitch in there. And a lot of people don't know this, but our federal government, who seems to spend a lot of money in a lot of different areas for whatever reason, constantly neglect their own computer system. So this is a long way of asking you, has there been any talk of about modernizing the computer system for the VA healthcare system?
Well, yes, Bert, there has. But you hit an interesting point about the government and its computer systems. You know, we really, it's really kind of crazy. It's a two-part problem. One is that the government has a very complicated procurement system, so that it's difficult for them to just go out and buy software or even buy customized software. Just to give you some examples, the FAA program that you were talking about runs in a 1960s computer language known as COBOL that they don't even teach in. If you think that's bad, so does the nuclear program that the president has for launching nuclear missiles. It still uses floppy disks.
Oh, my goodness.
And the VA, to their credit, has done better than a lot of other agencies. Excuse me. They have worked on updating and upgrading. They still have some systems that are in COBOL, just so you know. But what has happened recently, the Congress got themselves together and passed a bill called the Strengthening VA Cybersecurity Act of 2022, which they passed on December 27th and has now been signed by the president. And what it calls for is in two parts. One is an audit of the security of all the VA's computer and internet-based programs. And in addition, it calls for a review of the entire IT system and what needs to be done to make it modern and effective. And so that really is an opportunity that I think the VA will seize on to move forward. You have to give the VA leadership some credit. Over the last few years, they have really tried hard to move forward with computerizing and improving the computer systems that they use for both healthcare and the benefits side of the VA. As I know you know, the VA has three separate branches. One is the small branch that handles all the VA cemeteries around the country, most notably Arlington, where very important soldiers and so on get buried. But also there are VA cemeteries in almost every state, not literally every state, but almost every state. And the cemetery group handles all of that. But the two big branches of the VA are the healthcare system. The VA actually runs the largest healthcare system in the entire country, and the VA benefits system, which is second only to Social Security in size, and actually is close to Social Security in payments. But the purpose of this act is to audit all of the VA's software and hardware and talk about what needs to be done, A, to make it secure from hackers, and B, to upgrade it and improve it to the point it works effectively. And you may remember that we had talked about VA's old system with paper files. And, you know, it's nice to see that they really are taking this pretty seriously and trying to move forward.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I think you're right. That is, what do you call it, very helpful, hopeful and very positive. They're trying to move forward with it. And like you said, I mean, it's, you know, the VA is not only the largest healthcare system, but it's also isn't it the second largest department in the government, I think? I mean, the DOD, what's that?
Yes, it's right behind DOD in terms of size.
Yeah, it's massive, and it's just amazing that you know what they're able to pull off. I mean, I know for years, you know, we've been hearing about the VA's outdated paper claims, right? I mean, they're still, you know, I know several years ago they discovered boxes and boxes of paper claims that had been misplaced or had been ignored or whatever the deal was, right? So, again, the VA, you know, has done an extraordinary job with the systems they have, which kind of, you know, brings me up to this question is, has there been any progress on the whole paper claim thing?
It's hard to describe exactly how to say this, but there has been progress is the short answer. What's going on right now is more the VA has really been inundated with this whole new set of claims from the PACT Act. So what the VA is currently focusing on in terms of claims is more about hiring than it is about the computer systems. They've done a reasonable job bringing the computer systems forward to handle claims, but they're really shorthanded, literally in the personnel side. So their goal is this at this point to hire a lot of people because the PACT Act alone, which we talked about, is expected to bring an additional 3.5 million of veterans into the VA's healthcare system. And if you just stop and think about that, I mean, somebody has to put all that information in for every one of those people. And 3.5 million people, that's a lot of information that's got to get into the system. So, you know, they're expecting about 1 million claims based on the PACT Act. They've already had over 200,000 claims submitted to this point, and obviously there are more being submitted every day. So what they're focusing on right now, Bert, is hiring 2,000 more people to process claims. It's a lot of people. And they're hoping to bring on another 2,500 by the end of this fiscal year. So, you know, it's a big deal when they expand benefits like that. You know, it ripples all the way through the system. But right now, as I said, they're looking to hire thousands of new employees this year, and they are working on more ways to automate as they implement the benefits packages for these new claims that are created under the PACT Act. So, you know, it's complicated, but they're working on it. And internally, of course, they're focused on training their existing staff on how to deal with these new claims and what they're in particular supposed to do with them. One of the things that I think you and I mentioned at least briefly when we were talking about the PACT Act right after it passed is that under the PACT Act, they are prioritizing benefits for veterans who are terminally ill, and they started processing those claims last month, and so far they have granted about 200 of those claims. They've got about 2,400 more to go for people who are listed as terminally ill, but they've already paid out $3.4 million in benefits that had previously been denied to these folks and are now available under the PACT Act. So it's a really big deal. You know, most of these folks are older veterans, as you can imagine. So there are a lot of folks who fall in this category of terminally ill, thousands literally. And they're also trying to prioritize benefits for those who are homeless, those older than 85, and you'd be surprised how many veterans there are that are over 85. And there's a special provision in the VA law generally requiring them to prioritize benefits for anyone who was a Medal of Honor winner, which is a nice thing.
Yeah.
But the VA is really trying hard to focus on the hiring at this point. That's their current weak point. So they're working on that.
Ah, it's amazing. Yeah. It's interesting because I think that the PACT Act is going to help, and you're already seeing thousands of veterans being helped. And I'm just curious, with all the related problems, you know, as you just mentioned, they're hiring all these people and they're processing all these claims, all these new PACT Act claims. How do you think the VA is going to be able to handle so many claims?
Well, Bert, slowly is the honest answer. But I mean, you have to give them credit. They've been handed a huge task, and they're hacking away at it. The first thing they've done is to prioritize what groups of claims they're going to handle first. And they've, as we touched on a moment ago, they've agreed to focus on people who are terminally ill and folks who are homeless and other groups. And they're prioritizing the claims. And then they'll just work their way through them. The unfortunate side effect, if you're a veteran who already had a claim for benefits pending, and that claim was denied and you had to appeal, is that now there are all these thousands and thousands of new claims being pushed into the same system. And of course, it's like pouring water into a funnel. No matter how much you pour, only a certain amount will come out at the other end because of the size of the funnel. And right. So that's kind of what's happening with VA claims at the moment. The other groups of claims are being slowed down until the impact of these additional folks getting hired and trained actually comes to bear, and that's going to take a while. So, it was already a slow system, and unfortunately, it's now slower. But the bottom line is that the VA is trying to sensibly handle it. They've been given a big task, and they're working away at it. And I think it's just going to mean that these claims move more slowly. For folks who have a claim that VA can really fit into a pigeonhole quickly, those folks are going to get their claims resolved pretty promptly. For others, unfortunately, I think it's probably going to push the window, which is now typically 5 to 7 years to get all the pieces in an appeal completed up to probably more like 6 to 8 years.
Wow. Wow. All right. So not to sound pessimistic or negative or anything like that, but I'm listening to what you're saying and given so many new claims, and in some cases you have an appeals in there, is it likely that all of these veterans will live to get their benefits?
Probably not. But the one good thing about that, there is a new law that was sponsored by Representative Chris Pappas from New Hampshire. It's called the Faster Payments to Veteran Survivors Act. And that got signed just before the president left for his New Year's holiday vacation in St. Croix. And what it did was to require the VA to speed up processing of payments to survivors. Now, the payments to survivors fall into a couple of different categories, but the one that the VA has had the most problem with has actually been life insurance benefits payments to survivors. And you wouldn't think that would be the case, but if you look at the whole spectrum of veterans, for a lot of these folks, this is insurance that they took out when they were in the military. Typically, you know, it's about $10,000, although they have raised the amount that veterans are eligible to get over the years. But, you know, these are mostly older folks, of course, so this goes back. A lot of these are from World War II. And just stop and think about it a second. If you're 90 or 95-year-old World War II veteran and you die, you know, a lot of the people that you named as beneficiary, spouse typically, have now either been divorced or died themselves. And so it's actually a challenge for the VA sometimes to figure out where the people who are entitled to the money are. But this this bill has been signed and is being implemented, and it cuts down the time that the VA is allowed to take to try and find those folks and make the payments. And just to give you a sample, the last set of numbers I have were from September of 2020. At that time, there were 15,000 people who were entitled to benefits, life insurance benefits, and the total at that point was 155 million. It worked out to a little more than 10,000 per family. But, you know, 15,000 people that they just couldn't find to give the money to.
Wow. That's incredible. 15,000 people?
Yep. That the government would like to give an average of $10,000 to, and they can't find them.
Wow, I wonder if they could just, you know, I wonder if I could just receive that money in proxy or somehow. I mean, I'd like to help our government out as much as possible.
I'm sure that they have some provision for doing something with it, Bert, but you'd have to look into it, whether you have any eligibility.
Oh, my goodness, that's incredible. But you know what? I mean, you hear about this. You hear about different municipalities and government entities that I forgot what the term is, but it's basically, you know, lost property or lost money where they hold it until somebody can make a claim. And it's just terrible that, you know, 15,000 people isn't necessarily a lot in the – you know, because the VA services millions of people, but it's still money that these people rightfully deserve and it could probably use, especially now that the economy is changing.
That's all true, Bert. And, you know, it's, as you say, you know, there are various systems for doing this. I recently went through that with my mother, who died several years ago, and the state government publishes, you know, this missing property kind of stuff. And lo and behold, my mother's name was in there, and I had to go and get a copy of my appointment as her personal representative by the probate court and submit all that stuff. But they eventually sent the money, so that was good.
Yeah. That was excellent, man. That's great. That's great. Francis, we're out of time. I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for not only stopping by, but for taking care of our veterans. These are, in my opinion, unsung heroes. A lot of these veterans are suffering in silence, and I appreciate the fact that veteransbenefits.com is stepping in and helping them out.
Thank you so much, Bert. It's always a pleasure to be able to talk about these issues with you.
Absolutely. Good stuff there. Thank you, Francis. Good stuff there from Francis Jackson. Francis Jackson is a lawyer who specializes in disability law for those seeking veterans disability benefits. And if you want to support our troops, this is a really simple way of doing it. All you have to do is share this episode with everyone you know. If you happen to know somebody who's serving in the military, definitely tell them about veteransbenefits.com. Tell them about Francis Jackson and his team. Share this episode. Let us help them, or let Francis' team help them. It doesn't cost them anything to get a second opinion. It doesn't cost anything if they hire Francis Jackson, and Francis and his team will explain it to them. It doesn't cost them anything up front. It only costs them if they are able to help. And so I want to be clear on that. But bottom line is, if you know of anybody who's serving, if you know of anybody who has served, please share veteransbenefits.com. Let them know that in the event that they might need help collecting their benefits, there is somebody who's got their back. Francis Jackson is dedicated to this. You know, it's just he doesn't stop. He's like the Terminator. He's had claims that have lasted over a decade, and he is just plops along. He takes care of these guys. And so anyway, share this episode. Let's help as many people as we can understand about veterans benefits and veteransbenefits.com. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.